Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon and a very welcome to Liveline. You know the number, Joe, at rte.ie, the email 51551, the text 0818 715 815. If you feel, and I'm saying, if you feel you're not being listened to, if you are stuck, obviously you ring the emergency services first, but if you need any other advice from other listeners about what's happening today, I think people are well up to speed now, so to speak, on the effect of the big wind, as it's being called, and that's not to dilute its intensity, and especially what's happening in the northern part of our country, of our island at the minute. But if you do want to contact us, we're here and we will bring you any significant news if it breaks. But as you know, the main news broke overnight. So we'll distract you for a while anyway, we hope. But as I say, the Liveline is your programme. It is open. John contacted us this morning. He left a message for us. John, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And you were in Cork, obviously, with that accent. But you weren't contacting us about the storm. What were you contacting us about?
Well, it's not the proposed change. It is the changes. It's coming now that the Gardaí uniform is being changed again.
It's in today.
Yeah. They're now going to have the caps are gone. The peak caps are gone.
Yeah.
And they're going to be replaced with baseball hats, right? Or caps.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a step too far. I was never in favour of the open neck shirt getting rid of the toy, the casual look. I'm not in favour of the facial hair. Girls allowed to grow facial hair. And now you throw the cap on top of those two that I already mentioned, and I think it takes them the respect from the uniform, and by taking from the respect of the uniform, takes the respect from the individual girls in general, and the law itself. I think girls just should stand out, not blend in.
So they'd be wearing, would you want to describe the baseball cap for those people who haven't seen, and a lot of people
It's got the crest in front, yeah. And it's the blue, it's the kind of royal dark blue. But I mean, as I said, look, you factor that in, you know.
But is it in any way distinctive, or does it just, most baseball caps have the big peak, the logo on the front for Nike or MAGA, whatever.
Well, you see, that's the problem, Joe. Like, it has the Gardaí emblem, obviously, in the middle of the baseball cap. But, I mean, there's emblems and all, like baseball. Mm. I wear them myself. I mean, they're all over it. And there's a logo in all of them. If there's a sports logo, it's something else. Or people get printed stuff on them, their own baseball hats that are playing with, say, right? But I think this is a step too far completely. I think it's going to dilute the authority of the girls on the street. As I said, they will repeat. They're not supposed to blend in. They're supposed to stand out.
Okay, and what your point is, most people, though I wouldn't let one near my head, most people wear baseball caps now, young people especially. You'd never see anyone going around in the Garda hat, apart from Gardaí and prison officers and firefighters when they're on dress parade or whatever.
No, they're supposed to, if they're going to court or any ceremonial stuff, that they're issued with the peak cap and they have to wear that.
Well, doesn't that beg the question? Why, this is the Garda press office, the new baseball caps are for operational and on-the-beat policing, which I would have thought was 90% of a guard's job. They're more suitable to the baseball caps are more suitable for responding to live incidents, running, moving, etc. Do you accept that, John? If you run with a baseball cap, it's less likely to blow away.
Well, there is that. Like, I mean, the pea cap might fall off the head, but it's just what it stood for, I think, the full uniform. Like,
from today, the operational uniform, I don't know where they picked today, but why not? Anyway, the operational uniform, just for the listeners, includes the baseball cap. But you cannot opt to wear the dress cap, which is the cap we know now. You cannot opt to wear the dress cap with the operational uniform. In other words, when you're in your T-shirt, your short-sleeve T-shirt, open-necked or whatever, and your gilet, they're getting a gilet as well. If you're in your T-shirt and your gilet, you cannot wear the dress cap. You have to wear the baseball cap from today.
Yeah, that's
the only time. The only time, in fact, the only time the Garda Those, the Garda cap that we knew as the normal cap up till yesterday is now known as the Garda dress cap. And yeah, that will be continued to be worn with dress uniform on occasions such as court appearances. Well, then what if the baseball cap, the guard could have to run in a court appearance and grapple with a... Anyway, the dress uniform will be worn in formal surroundings like court appearances or for high-level meetings. Does that mean when a guard of a morning is due to be in court, he or she is in the dress uniform, has to wear a dress uniform, including the dress cap, which is the cap that was around till yesterday. Mm-hmm. If they then finish in the court at 11 o'clock, they can't go on duty then. They have to go back home and change into a baseball cap and a T-shirt.
Yeah, well, this is it. But I don't understand the part, Joe, as a girl, say, wearing the pea cap in court, because you went to the courts, the girls don't wear their hats or pea caps inside in court. They don't wear their caps. So they forget it, as a girl, the ceremonial stuff, where you could understand that, the dress, whatever. But, like, we say, it's all about respect. Like, I watch you when you're in the meaning of life still. I don't see Joe Duffy turning up in a baseball hat and runners in an open shirt.
Yeah, but I'm odd.
No, but
I wouldn't come into work. I wouldn't come into work without a shorter tie, most occasions, either a waistcoat and invariably double cuff. But I'm odd, as my mother
When I see the girls coming down the street, they stood out, right? Now, I'm going back to when they had the tie, whatever, because I don't agree with the open neck shirt. But there's no difference, though, between a traffic warden and a policeman with a baseball hat, right? You don't see the Metropolitan Police in London. They still retain the old-style helmets as well as the pea caps. The PSNI have the pea cap. The Scottish Police have the pea cap, right?
Okay, so all
of a sudden, look, when I see a girl, Joe, I don't want to see someone that looks like someone that came out of a hostel.
Is that unfair now, John? You say, could you wear a base? What are you saying? If a guard knocks on your door... If a guard knocks on your door at 3 o'clock in the morning... Sorry, if someone knocks on your door, God forbid, at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you open the door and you see someone in a baseball cap, you might get a bit of a fright.
Well, this is it, because at least before you knew what to expect, you saw the proper uniform, right? But now there's no difference with a baseball hat, an open-neck shirt, facial hair, and you don't know whether this guy is homeless or not, like, whether he's a guard.
Okay, stay there, John. Joe at rt.ie 51551. We asked Marty Whelan to give us an opinion. Marty, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are we today?
The most dapper man in RTE. You wear a suit every single day.
So do you.
So do I, but that's... I'm odd, you're not. You're dapper because you get it from your... I remember at your late dear mother's funeral and you spoke about her and her cardigan from Byers, and you spoke about your father being a buyer. Both of them worked.
My
he
father
worked
in
Cleary's, yes.
Yeah, father worked in the shirt department in Cleary's, and my mum was in Cassidy's in Georgia Street. She was a buyer. So, like, yeah. So putting on the good gear is just part and parcel of just how I am.
And would your father ever go to work in a pair of jeans and a pair of flip flops?
Oh my God, are we?
No, you're here, Marty. You're loud and clear.
There you are again.
Would your dad always dress for work?
But you see, it's a generational thing as well. Don't forget.
Okay.
Like when he would relax, he'd still have a shirt and tie on him. That generation, you know.
So
the outfit was important, and I grew up with that. But I like to feel, you feel better when you go in and you have your outfit on, and you just feel you're in control of yourself.
Now, what do you think? What's your gut reaction, Marty, to the Gardaí in a baseball cap?
Well, now the first thing I'd say is I think it's a good idea. This is the first thing, because I think it's modern looking, and it gets us up to speed with other forces, I'm sure, around the world. So I like the idea of it. What?
John, come in. John, what are you saying?
No, I don't, because I think we have... Look, the girls, unfortunately, have lost a lot of respect in society, because people now have no problem taking girls on physically, verbally, whatever, and the society we're now living in. And this, to me, only dilutes the respect even more. Like, when you guys going around now, they had full dress uniform before, wore a tie. They looked like they represented the law. They stood out. I keep saying that word. They stood out. But now they're just blending with every Tom, Dick and Harry wearing the baseball hat.
What do you think of that? But Marty, that's your point, isn't it? They do. But what about John? What about John's point that they should not? They shouldn't blend in.
Part of the operation, I suspect, is that blending in is probably a good thing in some ways for the guards. But the only thing I will say about the baseball cap is I wear baseball caps in the summertime, and I had a look at them when I knew you were going to give me a ring today, and I had a look, and I don't know how many I have that are navy.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? In other words,
these are all navy, obviously. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, they're easily replicated, and that could be a bit of a problem insofar as you can put any old badge on it, run quick enough.
Yeah.
And you might just, the wrong people might wear them. There is that danger.
That's a great point.
So baseball hats are Freudian slip there. Baseball hats, baseball caps are. You're right, Marty. They are easy to fake. But if someone,
buy them for 6 or 7 quid. Do you know what I mean? You're on your holidays, and I think that could be a problem. If someone tells you they're a guard, your immediate reaction is that you believe them.
But if someone walked up to your hall door, if you met someone on the street with the old style Garda hat on him, not the old style, yesterday's style, we're talking about yesterday and today, it's a sea change overnight. If someone walked up to you with one of those Garda hats on and he didn't have the rest of the uniform, you'd know immediately he was an imposter or she was an imposter.
Yeah.
But whereas someone comes up to you in a baseball bat, you don't.
No, a baseball hat. But you don't know. There's no question about it that could be a problem for people. I like the idea of modernity, and I get the point that they need to be flexible, they need to be able to run after fellas who are up to different and whatever. I get all that. But it is a point that you don't recognise the guard without the full regalia. Yeah. It is a thing. And it was always a very stylish thing. But times change, and I suppose
But the custodian helmet, as it's called, you know, the Bobby's helmet in London especially, which they still wear.
They do.
That's not exactly good for running, is it? You wouldn't be, Bolt wouldn't be wearing one of them.
It'd be good for keeping sandwiches, I suppose.
Yeah,
I don't know what else would be doing.
Well, back in the day, Marty, when I was working in the probation stroke prison service, the cap, the Garda cap, was also worn by prison officers. Still is. And they wear the full uniform. But one
That's
of the
right.
handy things about the Garda cap, which you cannot do with the baseball hat, you can photocopy the crossword, simplex, from the Irish Times that morning, cut it out and sellotape it inside your hat, your Garda hat, your prison officer. And you can sit there, if you're on static duty, you can sit there with your hat in your lap and you're doing the crossword. Can't do that with a baseball cap.
No. So already you're finding flaws.
John, what about that the Garda press office don't say it? By the way, they do say in reports today, they do say that they're now getting an extra gilet, you know, a sleeveless jacket to put on because the Gardaí were complaining about the cold.
Yeah, I saw that. But there's not that much of a difference in your age and my age. So the things you remember, the girls, when they had proper overcoats in the winter, proper full-length overcoats, which kept the cold out. But now they've got all these small little jackety things going around, and no wonder they're frozen. Like, no problem. But they're getting thermal fleece jackets for inside their uniform or whatever. But my main point is that I think the respect for the uniform has actually been overnight deleted. I keep saying this, they should stand out, not blend in.
And Marty, in your travels around the world.
Yes, sir.
Especially with Eurovision, I presume you're going to Basel again this year.
I'm going to visit somebody else's money in Switzerland.
Right, yeah, there's no problem there. You know that. Do you pick up hats in different cities? Do you notice people?
Yeah, I would pick up hats wherever I go, and I like you in the wintertime, I will also wear fedora. You know what I mean? The cold mornings coming in and out, which we like to do. But I pick up these hats when I be going away. I picked up some hats. I think I have a Russian submarine lieutenant's hat, various things from over the years. I don't know what it is. I just like the idea.
Just to come back to the baseball hat is now obligatory. That's from today. If you're a guard on the street. Now, do you not think they should be given the option to wear the other hat if they prefer it?
I would have thought the option would have been appropriate, okay. But I suppose in the Guards you probably have to have rules and regulations, and therefore they have to follow them. But I would have thought the option, because how smart they looked in the full uniform.
Okay, now I just want to. I see the next caller, Jimmy wants to talk about the PSNI. But before we talk about the PSNI, John's call generated interest as well in the general sense of dress, because coincidentally, John, Edwin Poots, who's the Speaker of the Northern Ireland Assembly, he had this to say yesterday in the Assembly about the dress of, or the appearance of, the MLAs.
I'd also remind members that the dress code is smart. Now, some of you have a very loose interpretation of smart, and I would encourage members to dress smartly when it comes to the chamber. We're not demanding that people, gentlemen, wear shirts and ties, but we're asking to dress smartly and to look up to doing the job. Just a few wee reminders there. Before we move to the next item of business.
Well, he did say it, and he said it yesterday, coincidentally. What do you think about the attire in our national parliament, John?
Where caps
are now worn. Obviously, you can, for a long, long time now, you can go in your anorak and your Guyanese T-shirt, if you wish.
Well, look, I think, again, it's down to respect. I think if you're elected by the public out there, I know you get the argument, Joe. Some people say, doesn't matter what you're wearing, as long as you're a legislator and you do the job right. But I think at the same time, it's the high pecking order. Like,
well, would you have got a fright yesterday, John, if your fellow city man, and I know you know him, Micheál Martin, if our Taoiseach had come back from Áras an Uachtaráin and put on a short-sleeved T-shirt and went into the Dáil to and an open neck T-shirt, and went with give me the famous Cork team that his son plays for, the Cork ship with the Rangers or whatever.
Nemo Rangers.
With the Nemo Rangers T-shirt on him, would the country have been annoyed? Yes, they would, wouldn't they?
Oh, a lot of people would, because, it's down to respect. It's in perception of respect.
Okay, let me bring Breda in. Stay there, John. 51551, Breda. What do you think of John's point that the Gardaí should stand out, not blend in, unless they're undercover? But the Gardaí should stand out.
I agree, and I think that I'm okay with facial hair and all that, but tattoos I'm not interested in myself, but I think that it's diluting their power. Diluting their power, because anyone can wear a baseball cap. Anyone can't just wear a Garda hat.
Yeah, which is Marty's point.
And I wouldn't wear a baseball cap personally. Yeah. I wouldn't be into that. But I think it's diluting their power, and there'll be even less respect for them.
But the Garda press office say it's to help them if they're running after suspects.
Asher Jesus Joseph. Should you could take off their hat and hold it in their hand while they're running?
Sure, could you take off the hat and use it as a frisbee and take down the suspect? From this is on Garda Síochána Facebook. We asked the spokesperson, but from tomorrow you'll spot one of two changes to our a uniform as we head out on the beat. Modern policing is more complex than ever, and while responding to fast-paced, evolving and dynamic situations, the cap could be cumbersome and was prone to getting knocked off. We work together to introduce a new cap, it's a baseball cap, that we will wear when we are all out on operational duties. It's giving, wait for this, John's gone, Breda, wait for this line. It's giving, this is the Garda line, it's giving street style. Is that even a sentence? It's giving street style. What do you think of that, Breda?
Just ridiculous. I mean, it's just minimising the Guards down to just being anybody on the street.
Okay, Larry O'Hara was in the Guards. Say with us, Breda, Joe at RT.ie for 4 decades. Larry, what do you think of the baseball cap? Now, the baseball cap is not a choice. If you're a guard and you walk out of the Garda station and you're not heading to a court, you have to wear the baseball cap. Would you wear it, Larry, back in the day?
Oh, well, I...
Well, you'd obey orders,
I suppose if I was ordered to do it, I'd have no choice. But I mean, Like, this is a joke too far. It's a joke. They've destroyed some already. They have defaced it in what they're putting members of the force out in at the moment. And I mean, where's the beautiful tunics we wore, the beautiful collar and tie? It's this thing. Even, I mean, what they're wearing already there, the most recent change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know whether a man was working in a supermarket or whether he was a schoolboy going to school or coming from school or going to a soccer match or what he was doing, what they're wearing is ridiculous. I mean, this thing is a step too far altogether.
And is it because they look, but surely the look isn't the issue, Larry, even though the Garda press office say it's giving street style. But the look isn't the issue, it's the functionality of it. And they say the cap, which was there until yesterday, the cap was a hindrance. Was it ever a hindrance to you?
No. Well, what we've done in our day, right, if you had to take action and you had to run or you had to... You took the cap in your hand, obviously, and you ran, you kept... You'll have to do the same with these caps. I mean, they'll fall off you too. Like, I mean, you have to hold them in your hand, won't you? Same thing. Only they're making the guards, whoever is advising them, whatever type of people are advising them to do this.
Probably fascinated. But Larry, if you, they're also suggesting that the dress cap, as it's now known as, that guards wore up to yesterday, most guards wore up to yesterday, they're now saying they're prone to inter alia, because they're saying you can't use them in a chase. You say they fall off, or they might hinder you. If you lost your cap back in the day, your Garda dress hat, as they're now calling it, Larry, was it easy to get a new one?
Yeah, there'd be someone going to Dublin to the stores or something, and they'd bring back a couple of caps, you know.
But you wouldn't have to fill in 72 forms and say, where's your cap gone, and where did you lose it?
No, what was known in the old days, you'd fill in your half sheet before you press buttons, you fill in your half sheet and you reported that you... Which often happened at a festival or something where there was a big crowd, and maybe a row would start and you get intermingled with the crowd and you would lose your hat. I've lost my hat a few times, just they dropped on the ground. And obviously some fellow, if you get a guard, the hat is a lovely souvenir to have going home. You won't give it back to you.
But it's very recognisable as a guard, a cap, whereas a baseball hat is a baseball hat.
I mean, I'd agree with John there. I mean, isn't every second teenager going around today in a baseball cap?
Well, Donald Trump has gone round a baseball cap. Every American's gone round in a baseball cap of one.
Doesn't make him look any better, does it?
Is that possible? Joe. Breda.
I'm going in a minute.
Okay, yes, so is Marty, I'm told. Yes, Breda.
But Gardaí need to be distinctive, not diluted.
Okay.
Yes. It's a step too far altogether. They want to stop this. No, this is a joke.
Okay, Marty. Yeah. Final question.
Thanks,
Breda. Final question, Martin. When you mentioned your dad, when he was relaxing at home, he sat in his armchair in a shirt and tie.
And instead of the suit that he'd wear to work, he would wear a jacket and trousers and maybe a cardigan, and he'd have a shirt and tie, and he'd take off the jacket. So that was relaxing. It's incredible, isn't it?
Now, steady when I ask you this question, Marty, but full disclosure, please. When you're relaxing at home, are you in a kimono? Are you in a short?
No. No, but in fairness, I'd have a pair of jeans on me, I'd have an open neck shirt. Put together by Mrs. Wheeler.
Yep.
As you know.
But you'd never wear a pair of sports shorts around the house. Speak freely.
No, okay.
I've seen your legs, and I think that's the correct decision.
A wise move indeed. Anyway,
God bless you, Marty Whelan. And Marty is on Lyric every day, waking us up, getting us up in the morning. And also he's heading out, thankfully, to the Eurovision again in a few weeks in Ball. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And again, if you want to contact us or need more information, Though the information is brilliant in terms of websites, but some people don't have access to a website. They only have access to a phone. And if you want information, we're here. 0818 715 815. As and from today, every Garda that steps out of a Garda station to do their work, their normal work, apart from going to court, every guard that's in a uniform will be, as well as the short sleeve T-shirt, open neck T-shirt, they'll now be wearing a baseball cap. Kevin O'Rourke, you were in the airport police. How long did you wear a peaked cap for, as we call it?
38 years, Joe.
And
well, it became very uncomfortable. It was grand back in the day that John was talking about with the big gabardine coat that he used to wear. But he's never stood at a checkpoint, I suspect, for 4 hours and let that got wet and it weighed 10 stone on you. But, you know, things move on, and the uniform of both the airport police and the Gardaí is nearly the same.
Okay.
They changed from shortened ties to open neck sweaters. Now, the police to the airport still wear the peak cap, but I think that's going to change. But if anybody that has worked in those services has tried to go on board an aircraft, or has tried to attend a road traffic accident, or has tried to attend a fight in the bar, you know, it's very difficult to be looking after parts of your uniform as well as trying to look after yourself and deal with the situation that you're in. And the bizarre thing is that if you go back to the station, and I've seen it, and you tell your sergeant, by the way, I lost my cap.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea the trouble you're in. I mean, so, like, it's much more difficult to let a baseball cap fall off you. But the other side of the coin is that all Gardaí and airport police take pride in their appearance. And they're clean, and they're tidy, and they're professional. Now, I can fully understand when you go to court to wear a peak cap in front of the judge. I fully understand that. I do take your point. I don't understand how they're going to change from that to their street uniform when they leave court. That's an issue that should be looked at and dealt with. But in terms of actually physically going out and doing your job, you have to wear a uniform that allows you to do it professionally, with all the requirements that it needs to carry it, because you're also carrying probably an asp, you're carrying your protective equipment, you have your stab vest on, so you're trying at your very, very best. I'm sure the senior officers are looking at the Gardaí on the ground and saying, we have to make them comfortable in order to do their job, and I think if they're doing it right, they'd be recognised on the street, and young people will look at them, and I think they'll say, you know, fair balls to Gardaí for changing into a nice modern society. You see it in New York.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I thought most of them in New York should wear the peaked cap. It's very much.
I know, but my point is that there are these NYPD baseball caps.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you've got to look into the modern world.
You can buy them. You can buy your
NYPD.
You can buy them anywhere.
Yeah, you can buy them on Amazon, and anybody can buy a baseball cap, as Marty says, and probably put a badge on it. But the reality of it is, if somebody knocks on your door and says, I'm a guard, well, the first thing you do is you say, let me see your warrant card. You don't look at their baseball cap. You don't look to see if they're carrying an asp. You look at how they carry themselves and how they speak to you. And I think most Gardaí are professional to carry out this new uniform. And I think it's a very positive step for them.
Okay. And Kevin, you say the peak cap, I thought the peak cap would actually give you, with the peak, well, this was the baseball, would give you a little bit more protection from rain. You say it doesn't, it just gets heavy.
No, it gets soaked. It really does. And they used to have these covers for them that you could put on your peak cap.
I remember them. Yeah.
But they go missing as time goes on. So you have to look at new methods of keeping people reasonably comfortable as they do their job. And I think if they're doing it in a professional way, I have no problem that they. And the other reason that they don't wear ties is because of a health and safety issue, is that if some thug comes up and grabs you...
But in fairness, they always wear...
I know a lot of them are clip-on now.
Clip-on,
now you would be amazed, Joe, at some of the older members in both forces that still actually wear a knot in their tie.
But I think they're issued with clip-on ties, aren't they?
We were all issued with clip-ons, but I still see some older members.
You can get an NYPD, Police Department, City of New York, baseball cap for €10 on Amazon. And there's cheaper, there's cheaper versions as well. So you're right, they are to a penny, so to speak. Okay, Jimmy Savage.
Look under the cap and see who's wearing it. That'll tell you who you're dealing with.
Jimmy Savage. Thanks, Kevin. And thank you for your great service and all their airport police and staff, indeed. Jimmy Savage. Jimmy.
Hello, Joe. Yeah, just like to say, first of all, I basically agree with all for that last call I said there. The reason I called him was I go to Scotland a lot, so I travel there regularly enough, and I see the police officers there wearing those baseball caps regularly enough for years now. But I would like to say they're very distinctive because around there's a circus around them that it's like a checkered black and white.
Yeah, like the Battenberg effect, as they call it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm saying, Joe, is they blend in well with their uniform, and there's no ambiguity whatsoever. You would never think this person wearing them is not a police officer, in my view. So they work very well, and I think, you know, we have to move into the 21st century. And I know if I was a guard years ago, I would not like to be wearing a pea cap and
Jimmy, what about the other point, which ironically was brought up by Edwin Poots, the Speaker of the Northern Ireland Assembly yesterday? He's saying in the Assembly, he actually spoke and he said he's have to dress more smartly, please. It's gone too casual. Do you think society, Parliament, other aspects of it, has gone too casual?
Yeah. Off the top of my head, I'd say no.
Off the top of your head, probably enough.
To his point, I'd say, I think there are times when it is appropriate, say, for a guard to wear a dress hat, as it's called now. But in the course of carrying out his day-to-day activities, I think the baseball cap will be much more comfortable, I think, and would allow him to do his job, his or her job, more efficiently.
Jimmy, would you ever... On what occasion would you wear a suit?
Probably weddings or funerals.
You speak for most people, don't you? You speak for most people. And why do you wear a suit at a wedding and a funeral?
I suppose I'm influenced by trends and the norm and most other people.
If you were walking someone down the aisle, your son or your daughter or whatever...
Yeah.
If you turned up in a pair of jeans and an open neck t-shirt, do you think your daughter or your son would object? Would get upset?
I would say so. I mean, I would see that as a form of disrespect under current norms. You know, that's just how I see it. You know, or I feel about it.
Okay.
But if you think about it too, Joe. When a guard is out on the beat, it's a very informed situation. You have to be agile respond. And I think if we just talk about a baseball cap, it will be much more comfortable in that situation.
Okay. Paul, finally, before the break. Thanks, Jimmy. Jimmy Savage. Paul, your point, please. Yeah, so there's more people coming.
Just very, very briefly. The previous two gentlemen spoke, basically made their points pretty well.
Okay.
I can't really add much better to them, and thanks to both of them for their service as well, to reiterate what you said.
Okay.
My main point is that if you're in a bad situation, I don't think you'll really care too much what way the guard is dressed that hopefully comes along to rescue you in their circumstances, you know.
But is there more... I think the question would be, Paul, if a guard was tackling somebody, which I've seen... it was a guard in a uniform, and there was a crowd gathered around, and somebody clearly starts, because a couple of them in the crowd were acting the maggot, and someone starts shouting, "Stand back from the guard, stand back from the guard." And it was clear in that encounter who the guard was, because he had a cap and he had the old style, but it was this is relatively recently, it was "stand back from," you knew who the guard was in that encounter. Does that not help in terms of respect?
We still know who the guard is, like, you know what I mean? This idea that the uniform is turning them into a rap star absurd.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? I don't like peak caps either. Like, it's a fashion statement. I wouldn't wear them.
Nobody wears a who wears a peak cap?
I don't wear
one.
You know
the guard type peak cap.
Yeah, well, everybody knows, for God's sake. You don't want to be a complete idiot to not realise it's a guard.
Yeah.
And this idea of respect, they're talking about respect, right? They're not going, these little thugs, these little yokes, you were talking about them yesterday only, these little scuts, they don't care what way a guard is dressed, whether they respect them or not. But the gentleman at the first caller was saying about, oh, they'd have less respect for the guards. These people are not going to have any extra respect for the guard, whether he's dressed
finally,
smartly or
finally,
casually.
Paul, how did you get through the storm? How did you manage? Was it okay?
Oh, fine. Yeah, okay. I just kind of slept through most of it.
Okay.
Heavy sleeper, thank
Thanks,
God,
Paul.
You know.
Finally, good morning, good Paul. Mary Higgins, before the break, your father was a member of an Garda Síochána Conor for nearly four decades.
Yes, Joe, good afternoon. How are you? He was in the force for 36 years in the same station in Donnybrook.
Yeah, great. Beside us here.
And, the lovely area. I do agree. I think the uniform now, it's very smart. I think having the baseball cap, there will be a crest on it, so you'll be able to identify a guard. And I think it's very practical nowadays between guards and bangal on in cars, on bikes, on horses. I really think it's very practical. And as I said to your researcher there, you wouldn't have a PE teacher going into school in a suit.
Okay, so
she dresses appropriately. She'd actually wear a tracksuit for the job she does.
Okay. So you agree that the casual is, but the baseball cap is very easy to reproduce. As I said, you can buy the NYPD ones. I'll look up during the break other ones. You can buy the NYPD one for less than $10 on Amazon, and it looks like a real cap, a real baseball police cap. Anyway.
But apart from the cap, Joshua, I'm sure the uniform is still identifiable.
Mary, what do you think of the T-shirt and the open neck and the short sleeves and the...
I think you have to move.
To move with the times.
And I think I'd respect them. Okay.
How did you manage during the storm?
Everything was good, safe, we're all well.
Thank God. Okay. Thanks indeed, Mary. Mary Higgins, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Just a quick update. Unprecedented. Just under 1 million homes and businesses across the island, that includes Northern Ireland, obviously, have no power, which is unprecedented, according to the Irish Times. The water supplies of over 500,000 people are at risk after the storm damage. Gusts of 183 kilometres per hour were recorded at Mace Head in County Galway. That's the greatest speed ever. And Vodafone say that 14% of its mobile network sites are currently offline. Now, the status red has been lifted for every part of the country at this stage. The buses are back running. I know Dublin bus is back running. And I presume there's no reason why... Well, of course, roads, is, I presume. But anyway, that's... As Alan O'Reilly said, yes, the electricity was going to be the big thing. But a million homes without and businesses without electricity, and nearly 500,000, their water supply is in jeopardy. And Bill Cremin, you got a bad blow during the storm last night, Bill. What happened?
Well, Joe, I got a phone call from my daughter, Louise, at about 7:30, 8:15 this morning, as we were listening to the wind howling outside in Cork. And she said that we've got, look, the photograph here of some of the roof coming away from the ice rink that we have up in Blanchardstown in the big marquee.
Yeah, it's been there for a long time, hasn't it?
Over 10 years, Joe, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I saw the images earlier because they were one of the first things to go up on social media. I thought it was a marquee to begin, but it's not a marquee, is it?
No, it's a marquee, Joe, but these marquees now are so sophisticated.
They
resemble permanent structures, you know, but essentially we build this in early November, and we opened to the public then during that month, and it remains on site until we close, and we were due to close this coming Sunday. Would have been the last day of the season.
What's left standing, Bill?
Well, I suppose there's about a third of the structure, Joe, and I, just for your listeners who mightn't have seen anything, the structure is 30 metres wide by about 60, 65 metres long. And in fact, there are two structures there, a small one and a big one. And the 30-metre structure, probably, I suppose, 75% of that is on the ground. You know?
And had you made any contingency plans given the warnings, or could you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we would have consulted with our suppliers who are very experienced. And remember, there would have been, like, lots of ice rink marquees up around the country during the winter time. We've already been through two red storms, so it's nothing new to us. So we would take the normal precautions. Like, there would never be a situation would never occur, I suppose, where there would be staff or customers in the marquee during an event like this. You know, we're thankfully, we always get a good bit of notice of these. Think we were aware of this since last Tuesday. Now, there would have been no time. It's such a big structure, there wouldn't have been any time to take the structure down. And in fact, if we had even started that, it would have probably compounded the issue. We might be left with a structure that's half up and half down. So the standard practice is to secure the structure as best we can.
Okay.
You know, make sure that the doors are all secured and so on. And that's what we did.
And is any of the structure, I know you're going to take it down anyway, which is makes it even worse. Is any of the structure reusable?
We don't know. That has to be assessed, Joe, by experts. And there, we have a lot of people. I'm here on site now in Blanchardstown myself, and we have a lot of people here. And I hope among the crowd there's an expert or two who can evaluate it properly.
Now, the main thing was no one was injured. Tell me that, Bill. No one was injured.
No, thank God.
Look, God. That's the main thing.
You know, we knew that this was coming, so like we would have communicated with all the customers that were booked in to say, lads, don't come. And in fact, even when the weather is bad and there isn't a red warning,
but there wasn't anyone out and about. Do you have any idea what time it was gone with the wind? Any idea what time it did?
It was probably somewhere between 6:30 and 8 a.m. was when I suppose it was at its worst in terms of strength of wind. You know?
Okay, insurance.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, we'd as a business, like, we'd be required to operate with full insurance, and we do. So, if we're not dealing with people slipping and tripping, we didn't think we'd be dealing with this, you know. But we've full cover for this. We would hope, yeah.
Okay. The main thing is no one was injured. Again, I presume it's your life's work in terms of your income and people working. Many staff would have been working there, Bill.
We would have had about 40 staff, Joe, seasonally employed, and a lot of young people, but some permanent staff as well. Like, we have, I suppose, we would three ice rinks normally around the country, two in Dublin, one in Dunleary, and one in Cork, unfortunately, ice rink here in Blanchardstown. And then that's our winter business. And then in the summer, we operate a sippet. So we have zip lines in forests around the country. We're always dealing with weather in one form or another.
Yeah, okay, but is this the worst incident ever?
Absolutely, Joe. We've never seen anything like this. In fact, I drove up with my daughter this morning from Cork, and even we could feel the car moving, and we saw plenty of evidence of the
damage. Will it make you reassess future structures given the changing climate?
Well, I suppose we would always be very careful about the way these structures are put up, and a lot of people look at the safety of them. So they're fit for purpose and would withstand normal weather events. I suppose the thing is that you can only build for normal weather events. It's probably a bit early for us to be making those kind of decisions now. But look, I mean, this was an extraordinary event. And that's what we have to think about. And you look at what happened to Mayo GAA or in the west of Ireland, and that was a structure that was completely gone as a result of this storm. And that was as anchored as you can be. And we had, of course, in the last red weather warning, we had a permanent building in Tralee lost its roof. So these are not unusual.
Happened,
and we've lived through all that, you know, before. So this was just absolutely unprecedented. But thankfully, look, no one was hurt.
That's the main thing, and safe travelling, hopefully your staff. I know you run other businesses seasonally as well, so that will help your other staff. Thanks indeed, Bill Cremin of the Blanchardstown Ice Rink. And stay with the weather. As I said yesterday, we're getting an awful lot of weather. And a few weeks ago, we were talking about the shipping forecast, which is 100 years old on the BBC radio. Their radio station is slightly older than ours. Not much older, but slightly old. And Gerard Fleming's name came up because one of our callers said Gerard Fleming. Gerard, good afternoon, Gerald.
Hi, Joe. Good to talk to you.
Likewise. And people recognise your voice instantly, even without the wink on radio. Now, Gerald, this woman said that you, through your shipping forecast and through your help, because she rang you on a number of occasions, her husband was sailing around the world, and she felt everyone felt they knew you when you were on telly, and he used to live by the shipping forecast, which she would relay to him wherever he was, and she asked the question, where is Gerald Fleming? Where is Gerald Fleming? You're retired, obviously, Gerald.
I am indeed, Joe. Yeah, I retired from Metairn about 7 years ago, living in Wexford. Still busy with lots of things.
How was Wexford last night?
Wexford was probably the least worst place in the country, to be honest, with the trajectory of the storm. Like, we weren't ever going to get the worst of it. So, we had a windy night, but so far as I can see, looking out around, no damage. And I can look out over the estuary of the Slaney, and it didn't look too bad this morning, to be honest.
And how long has Metair, I mentioned the shipping forecast in the UK from 1925, when it first was broadcast. How long has Metair around, Gerald?
So when the state was formed, 1921, the UK Met Office, of course, had a meteorological infrastructure in Ireland, a few observing stations and the like.
Okay.
And, of course, the founding fathers had many things on their mind when they set up the state, but weather wasn't maybe the first thing.
Okay.
So it took until about 1936, about 15 years before they actually got round to setting up a meteorological service. And in the interim, the British did the needful, I suppose, for that period of 15 years. But 1936... the Irish Met Service, as it was called, was established.
So up to 1936, we still had British weather?
Effectively. Well, British weather forecasters and British weather observers and so on.
And did we have to pay them for the first decade of the state, I wonder?
I guess we did. That's a detail I don't know, but I guess we did. Yeah. And indeed, when 1936, when the Irish Met Service was set up, a lot of people transferred from, because they were based and working in Ireland, so they transferred into the new service, of course, and became Irish civil servants rather than British civil servants.
But the British taxpayer would have been paying for the first 10 years. They would have been paying those staff, I presume.
I guess there was some element of subsidy there. But again, now, of course, it was all to the benefit of the British to have observations in Ireland, because that helped them with getting ahead of their own forecast, given the way that the weather moves across from the Atlantic across us.
So when did our Met service take off, so to speak? When did we get going?
Yeah, taking off is a good metaphor, because, of course, it was set up really to service what was the precursor to Aer Lingus, when flights were beginning to take off from Dublin Airport, because weather was critical to the safety of flights, still is even all these years later. So it was really set up, and for probably the first 40, 50 years, it was very much tied into air transport. It was focused really on that. And then it was only later that the focus came into the maritime, which you discussed a couple of weeks ago with some callers.
And then, so it was the transatlantic. We had to have a better grip on the weather, more knowledge of the weather. And then when did the weather forecast on radio? I know radio started in 1926, but when did the weather forecast start on radio, do you know, Gerald?
Yeah, it was a bit after that. It was quite a bit. Now, in the late 1940s, the forecasters who then were in the airport, Dublin Airport, that's where they were based, in the beautiful old building there. They used to write out scripts and they'd send it over to Radio Air, and then they'd be read out by the announcers or by the newsreaders or whatever. And then in 1961, there was a separate office established in O'Connell Street, the offices were at the time called CAFO, the Central Analysis Forecast Office. And their focus was very much on what we now call public weather services, so the public forecast. They started with the television. So the first day of broadcasting of Telefiche had a television broadcast.
Yes,
and the radio came a little bit later.
Wow.
In terms of the the live radio that you have, say, at 5 minutes to midnight and so on, when the Met Aaron forecaster comes on and gives you the shipping forecast and all that. That started in the early 1960s.
Now, most people, when the I know the weather stations located in so many places, but most people would associate, apart from the television bulletins and the radio bulletins, most people would associate with the building, the very distinctive building in Glasnevin, up there beside the Bon Secours Hospital. And when was that? Because I presume that was purpose-built for the Met Service.
That was purpose-built, yeah, and a very distinguished architect, Liam McCormack, who did a lot of churches in Donegal.
That's right.
He did the church in Glasnevin as well, so it kind of echoed that sort of tent shape that the church in Glasnevin has there at the bottom of the hill. So Liam McCormack was commissioned, and that building was opened in 1979, after a fairly difficult construction, apparently. Apparently the builder went bust halfway through it and somebody else had to take over. So those stories echo down the years. But however, 1979, that's when that building opened and the forecast office transferred up there.
And is it fair to say that the forecast technology in Ireland is state of the art? It's up there.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, I presume it absolutely is.
I mean, we're just so fortunate. I mean, the gentleman on there just before me was saying, you know, how they'd received the warnings in, what, Tuesday or something, three, four days in advance. And we take that for granted now in Europe. That's not the case everywhere, but, you know, our technology is up there with the best of them in Met Aaron. And we have a lot of programs. In fact, we've got a very important one with the, I think it's the Dutch, the Danish and the Icelanders. We have a common approach now where we pool our resources because, you know, we're all small countries in the scheme of things and better to hang together so we can get better resources to focus on our Atlantic weather.
And so many more. So many people now access the websites and they can...
Oh, absolutely.
It's incredible. And so there's a lot of experts now. And I know you're qualified and the people in Met Office obviously are qualified, but there's a lot of... there's a buddy of mine and he's obsessed with the weather, Gerald. He's not a farmer or a gardener. He just follows weather and he can tell you what's from his own computers and logging onto your own websites, what's coming, how it compared to last year, the previous year. It is a hobby. It is a pretty serious hobby for a lot of people.
It's a huge interest for very many people. I mean, some of them professionally interested if they're farmers or gardeners or whatever, but others just are just very interested in it as a topic. And I mean, fair play to Met Aaron. There's a vast amount of information on that website if you go digging in it, you know. And there's a lot of other websites available where you can get weather charts and a lot of people look at them and compare and contrast and critique the forecast. And that's fair enough too, you know. It's very much an ethos of the weather business worldwide. That information is there to be shared. It has to be put out there for everybody to see. And that's the way we work across the world.
But from the time, just briefly, Gerald, from the time you started in the Met Office to the time you retired, you started, what, in 84? You retired in 2017, which is well over 30 years. How would you measure the changes insofar as you could? You finished as head of forecasting in 2017. I presume the changes were gargantuan even in that relatively short four decades.
They were incredible. You know, when I started, we were drawing charts by hand. We didn't have much in the way of satellite images. We had nothing in the way of radar images we're talking of. All these things we take for granted now. When I started doing the TV forecast in RTE, 84, 85, we used to draw all the charts by hand.
Wow.
We would take out our marker and draw them by hand, wrap them up, put them on our bicycle and cycle across from Glasnevin across to Montrose.
No.
And the graphics artist there would dicky them up with a few H's and L's. And in the studio, which was the old news studio, we'd be at one end of it and the likes of Don Coburn and Anne Doyle and people like that would be at the other end doing their thing, of course. And at the end of the news, the cameras would swing around and we'd have to do our little piece with our magnetics and our hand-drawn chart. And sure, of course, now it's all computer-driven and you can see with Jerry Murphy and Siobhan and Michelle and all of those
and
when they talk about it.
Gerard, we like our weather forecasters, don't we? They become their celebrities.
We love it.
Well, Joanna's on Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, she is.
And I know it's only a matter of time before you throw your hat in the ring.
Oh, no, I don't know. That might be a step too far.
To answer the question of that lady a few weeks ago said you were a lifesaver when you were in the Met Office. You've retired, and you're busy, and you're living in Wexford.
I'm living in Wexford. I'm still busy, mainly with meteorological work. I do a lot of work with some international organisations, and that keeps me busy and keeps the brain sharp enough still.
Oh, well done.
So, you know, it's good to keep the interest. So we're not quite
and the people
ready
still,
for the pipe and slippers
yet. The people still recognise you on the street.
They do. The younger ones don't, of course.
Yeah, I know.
It's a while now since I was on the screen, but of course they do, yeah. But I mean, sure, look, that's part of it.
And where did this? I don't mean to be facetious, but I am conscious of the news coming in of people losing electricity and water. But where did the wink come from?
It was just a way of creating a link. You know, people were not being. When we went into the what we called our new studio, which was about 1986 or 7. It was a completely automatic studio, so you know there's nobody else in there. So you've got to try and make some sort of
intimacy. Yeah, Anne Mead has just phoned in. Stay there, Gerald. Anne Mead, yeah. What do you want to say to Gerald Fleming?
I just want to say, Joe, and to Jerry, that immediately his name was mentioned.
Yes,
I conjured up the wing.
Okay.
I don't know how he got away with it.
Well, he did.
I often wondered at the time if it was...
It was a signature.
Yes, it was. It was a signature.
Okay. And the main... And how did you get on through the storm yourself, Anne?
Fine, in Dublin.
Okay.
It's fine in this area. Now, it's very rough outside. It's not good enough for
But we were well warned. It's not a great thing this time. Well, for a long time now, we've various events. We are well warned in advance and well prepped. So the main thing is on our hands and knees, please, as the storm disappears northwards over into Scotland now. And same be said for there. The main thing is nobody has been there's no fatalities. That's the main thing. Anne Mead, good man. What do you want to say to Gerald? He's happily retired. He's still as energetic as ever. You can hear him. His voice hasn't changed one bit.
Clearly, and
yes.
He's not forgotten.
No,
which
okay.
Is lovely.
Gerald. Brilliant, Anne.
Good
Gerald, not forgotten Fleming.
Good to know. It was a privilege to do that job for so many years between RT and Mitter and MFA.
Okay, great combination. Thanks indeed, Gerald Fleming and me, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, as you know, over the years, Lifeline listeners are intensely interested in a very good way in the environment and animals and what have we. That discussion that we had last week about hares took off, and we had amazing contributors who phoned in. So a number of people asked this morning, okay, we are obviously very concerned about human life, but what happens bird life and sea life during storms? So we rang Shazia Waheed. Shazia is a marine biologist. Shazia, good afternoon. We were told that they were the strongest winds ever recorded in Ireland. Would that have affected bird life, as far as we know, Shazia?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So in particular seabirds, because of course all the roughest weather would have been out to sea. Yeah, so like oftentimes you'll see before a storm, like birds, like especially seagulls, they tend to be found more often inland. You know, they're trying to shelter from the winds to come. But so one of the ways, I suppose, that the more offshore birds then, like say your guillemots or gannets will be affected, I suppose, is so it's one of the things is they can't feed, you know, when weather is that rough, the seas are high, you know, they just can't fish effectively. And you know, these, I suppose, seabirds, they have a very high metabolism. They're warm-blooded.
Okay.
They need to eat a lot just to keep warm and just to stay alive. So if they have to deal with a few days of really rough weather, they're going to be struggling. And one of the things that is often seen, I suppose, after really bad storms, or especially if you've one storm after the other, is you will get birds that become emaciated and weak, and they tend to wash up ashore then and be found washed up, you know, on the beaches.
So there
after,
was so,
big storms.
So we would lose birds in a storm like last night?
You would, yeah. Now, I suppose the worst times of year for the storm to affect the bird life would be during the breeding season. And obviously it's not during the breeding season at the moment, but definitely some of the, maybe the younger birds that aren't as experienced will be were affected by it. Yeah.
And pardon the counterintuitive nature of this question, would fish and underwater life be affected in a storm like last night?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So mainly it would affect the near shore environment, so animals in the shallow water. You know, so say now animals on the intertidal zone, on the rocks, that are pounded by the waves. But also any of the habitats that are in shallow water, like, for example, the seagrass meadows, which are really important for, like, so many different species. They're very kind of sensitive habitats as well, so they'd be particularly affected by, you know, storm surges. And even the kelp forests. I mean, a lot of people now say who'd walk along the beach this time of year, they'd see huge amounts of kelp, you know, the brown seaweed, the oreweed washed up, which is completely natural. But I suppose a storm like that now could do, you know, if we've just uproot maybe too much of that, and it could end up devastating, like, a kelp forest, you know, beyond kind of what it normally would experience in the winter months.
But Shazia and Gerald mentioned now, Gerald Fleming from the Met Office, obviously the technology, and we're able to give scientific-based predictions, so to speak. But there was a time, and there was I'm thinking of TP O'Crahour down in West Kerry. He used to be on Live Now telling us when the weather was going to turn. Humans used to have, some humans used to have that ability, didn't they, to predict the weather?
They say, yeah. I mean, look, I wouldn't know too much about that, but I suppose animals are a lot more clued in than we are. You know, they can, I mean, a lot of animals say, it's not a weather-related thing, but a lot of them can detect, say, the magnetic field of the Earth, and that's how they travel, you know, like salmon finding their way back, you know, across the ocean from travelling thousands of kilometres away. So, look, animals can be attuned into a lot of things that we don't feel. So I suppose another example would be, you'd often hear about animals, say, moving upland before tsunamis and think maybe they can detect. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot we still don't know, but there are a lot of theories.
Would there be unusual animals washed, or unusual mammals washed up during a storm like the one, given the speed and the strength of that wind, obviously, and on the sea, would there be unusual sea life washed up?
Definitely. I mean, look, in general, after a storm, you can find a lot more things obviously washed up in the beach, you know, casualties from the storm. But I suppose one of the, curiosity thing or interesting things you can find is, because the storms track across the Atlantic Ocean, you know, from America, you can get, like, some exotic species turning up. So I suppose in recent years, and this is partly to do with changes in currents now as well as just storms, but the two kind of overlap, really. We've seen a lot more of these species called the Portuguese man-o-war,
which
a lot of people refer to them as jellyfish. Now, they're not technically a jellyfish. They're a siphonophore, but for all intents and purposes, they look like jellyfish. So they would typically be a tropical species. They come all the way from around, like, the Caribbean, and they're often still alive when they wash up here. So some people might have seen them washed up. They kind of look like, like, their other name is the blue bottle, which they often call them in Australia, because they're almost like, they have a gastrofloat float, and they have these long blue tentacles underneath. So they can sometimes look almost like a plastic bag when they're washed up. But we might see a lot of them now washing up, especially along the west coast now.
So what should people do?
Well, don't touch them. Try and avoid them. I think some of the issues that can turn up would be obviously for people who are doing, you know, sea swimming or even dog walkers. They could end up stepping on the tentacles and stuff. And so some other interesting things then that could turn up, like, I think in the last few years, there's been a few more sightings of, or strandings of, sea turtles, actually.
Okay.
I just saw a news article there a couple of weeks ago about one that was found in County Clare. I think it is with Ocean World in Dingle where they rehabilitate them. So, like, one of the things that can happen is they get caught up, you know, they migrate naturally thousands of kilometres throughout the ocean, but especially the younger ones, they can get caught up in the currents. So, like, obviously with the big storms, they can get really thrown off course and they can end up in our waters, which are obviously too cold for them. So one of the things that can happen. So now there's not many found each year, but people do find them on the beach. They'd be stunned by the cold, and that's what happens.
Would any birds especially have, given the wind last night and the duration of it, Would any of them have died from exhaustion?
Yeah, well, that's what can happen with, I suppose, the birds on land, I'd imagine, be hunkered down, but the ones that don't have a base at sea, the seabirds, definitely. And you will find, I'm sure there will be, unfortunately, you know, seabirds washing up dead, deceased along the shores, like over the next few days. Yeah.
Okay.
That does happen.
Fascinating. Thanks, Shazia Waheed, a marine biologist, Gura Mila Maga. Joe, thank you so much. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, the Meaning of Life, as usual, on Sunday night, 10:30 is this Sunday's Meaning of Life, which was mentioned earlier on. Thank you, John, for mentioning it. Is with the astonishing actress, well-known actress. I won't say legendary actress because she's still a young woman, but she is a legendary actress, Alwyn Fowere, and it's a fascinating life story. Her life was very interesting. Her parents from France after World War II, how she came here, and then her own life, especially in the last few years. And the way in a lot of people's lives, ill health, not on Alwyn's part, but on the part of her loved ones come into her life, and she'll be talking about that. On Sunday night, The Meaning of Life, 10:30. Susan, baseball caps for Gardaí, yes or no?
No, not really. I first of all, I played with a brass and reed band, Dublin Brass and St. James's Brass and Reed Band for years, and they changed the uniform a few years ago, and they used baseball ball caps. But originally they had a lovely, a very official type uniform, like something similar to the Guards, except for it had red braid in it, you know. But when we played at Arbor Hill and say like Bowdenstown, I felt we really needed the older uniform. As regards to the guards and the baseball caps, I'd be more looking, be looking more protective.
Okay.
Type caps. Yeah.
They should wear a bicycle. God forgive God. I take your point.
Maybe it's called out to burglaries.
I take your point. Yeah, for protective. Yeah. A baseball hat won't give you much protection, would it?
No, it wouldn't. And couldn't really wear baseball caps at, say, the 1916 commemoration, Easter Rising, you know, commemoration. So we used to march around Bowdenstown. And so every year or so,
but
I always thought we did.
Susan, say listen to Brian Hand. He's going to come out now with all guns blazing. Brian and Drada, Brian.
How are you, Joe?
What do you think?
No, I was ringing up earlier on. I thought it was, you know... Yes, they should be moving with the times. I agree with the baseball caps. The only thing I don't agree with, I don't know why they have to wear a dress uniform to go to court.
Okay.
Is that for the judge's benefit or what? You know?
That's interesting in itself, isn't it, that you spot that they're told you cannot wear the baseball cap in court, but you have to wear the baseball cap outside of court.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, Joe. And fellas, guards then have to go home or go wherever they go to change back into their uniform to go on the beat. But I was just saying, years ago, they changed the peak caps from the army and they gave the berets or whatever. And now you see the armies around the world wearing the peak caps and they look ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know, in some of these foreign countries, you know, I think they should move on.
Okay.
The only ones who should wear the peak caps, I'd say, is the officers, you know, the higher-ups to distinguish them from the guards.
They will be allowed. Okay, move on. Okay, thanks indeed, Susan. Thanks indeed, Brian. That's what I'm doing. Moving on to Ray Darcy next. Sound Mark Dwyer, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Annette Egan. Ray is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.